Welcome to Ringside with Eric Dean, presented by Mile High Sports. Coming to you Saturday, February 22nd. I am, of course, your Avalanche beat writer for ColoradoHockeyNow.com, podcaster here at Mile High Sports, and I'd like to break down the disappointing loss that began about 4 hours ago, where the Avalanche and the Nashville Predators faced off in Nashville in the first game following the Four Nations face-off two-week break that the Avs and obviously the entire NHL had. The Avs lost 2-1 against the 30th place team in the league. This is probably not going to be a long episode because it is a little bit disappointing. However, I do want to touch, and this is going to be something that I start to do every episode, on some of the conversations around the NHL in terms of trade rumors and speculation and things like that. Now, I also do want to say, you know, it has been, I believe, 5 days now since my last podcast. I have not yet done my post-game recap of the finale of the Four Nations face-off, but I promise you that's coming. I saved that one for Sunday morning on purpose because I do want to, you know, talk about that in length. So if you're listening Sunday to this podcast, well, check your podcast feed. It's probably already out. If you're listening to this on Saturday, after I had uploaded it here in the evening, then go to sleep, wake up, you'll see it in your podcast feed in the morning because I'll be up bright and early to record that one. So let's get into it. Let's get into a bad loss against the Nashville Predators where I don't like anything about that game. In the sense where, look, the Avalanche played well. They outshot them 32-17. They were the better team. They had the better chances. We are at the point of the season, however, where no excuses can be made. This team, for the last 30-40 games, has been kind of overcoming this change, the goaltending, the obvious one, the big Mikko Rantanen deal. A lot going on, a lot happening, but in the end, if you're the Colorado Avalanche, you should be ready for the fact that, number one, there are now only 5 games separating you from the trade deadline. And number two, you need to be ready for the fact that this is the final push to the playoffs. There are 24 regular season games, and that's a lot of hockey. You know, that's a little more than, it's a little less than a third of the season. But you're at the point of the year where enough is enough with the bad losses. The getting shut out by a Vancouver Canucks team or losing to Nashville today, losing to Nashville the first time you lost to them, having that brutal, you know, loss to the Islanders earlier in the year, and all the many bad losses they've had this year, and there have been a lot of them. It gets to a point this late in the season where you just cannot have those. And you especially cannot have those when you're in the first game of a back-to-back following a two-week break where everybody's refreshed. Obviously, you're still missing Manson and Nichushkin, but this is the same lineup you had before the break. Everybody's refreshed except for those Team Canada guys and Arturi Lehkonen. Everybody's feeling great. Scott Wedgwood's back. He's the one making the starting goal. You're riding some positive vibes, beating Calgary and Edmonton before the break. Yes, of course, you played well, but you came out, you scored one goal, and it came from Sam Malinsky, who hasn't scored since November 9th. Not good. There's something wrong with this team that just seems so uninspiring and underwhelming, and, you know, it might sound like I'm having one of those the sky is falling moments, but the reality of the Avalanche right now is when you look at their line combinations, when you look at where the production is coming from, it's underwhelming to say the least. You know, last year you had some kind of weird combination of a second line with Ryan Johansson, and then you had the Logan O'Connor, Miles Wood, and Ross Colton line. You obviously had the top line with Nate and Mikko and you know, probably Drouin or Lehkonen, whoever was going at that time. And then you had nothing else. And this year, you have a first line, you have a fourth line. And even on the fourth line, you know, I've said this before and I'll say it again. Guys like Joel Kiviranta and Parker Kelly, no disrespect to those players. They are excellent. They have been great all year. However, the depth on this team is so bad that those guys are ultimately guaranteed a spot in the lineup, and it should not be that way. If you're Yoel Kiviranta and you're Parker Kelly and you're playing every night, it should be because you are playing better than the 13th and 14th forward options that you have available to you. The problem is right now this team doesn't have a 13th and 14th option. They barely have a 10, 11, and 12th option because their middle six is completely dropping the ball. You have Yusso Parsonen in on the second line. He had an assist today. He's shown flashes of brilliance. Should he be in that role? Absolutely not. You have Casey Mittelstadt, who's got 3 goals in his last 50 games. You have Ross Colton, who's got 5 goals and 2 assists in his last 31 games. You have Miles Wood, who's had an atrocious season. Didn't take any penalties today, but he's been running into penalty issues. 2 goals and 1 assist. 3 points on the entire freaking season in 24 games. A lot of issues right now with the middle part of this lineup, and it's not great. Jack Drury, love what he's brought to this team so far. Should he be the third line center? Probably not. I would say he's better suited to be the fourth line center. In his first three games, Drury had 2 goals. He had a goal against the Rangers and then against the Islanders. And then you've got 6 games in a row now without a point for Jack Drury. You're not getting any points, seemingly at all, from 5 of your 6 pieces in the middle six. Colton, Wood, Drury, Parsonen, Mittelstadt. That leaves nobody but Jonathan Drouin. And then you have your fourth line, which, again, they've been playing well. But nobody on that fourth line is really playing well enough to say that they should be in the lineup 82 games a year unless they're beating out somebody else. But again, there's no depth on this team. Someone like Parker Kelly. Kelly had a great stretch of hockey in that final bit of games before the break. He even had an assist against Edmonton and Calgary in each game. And he played pretty well against Nashville. I'll give him that. But before that back-to-back against Edmonton and Calgary, he went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 games without a point. So that's your fourth line. And then you got Yoel Kiviranta, who's on 11 goals. He had 10 goals by November. Yoel Kiviranta, from January 18th until today, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. In his last 12 games, 1 single point, 1 single goal. Logan O'Connor, offensively, his numbers have not been up to par this year. Logan O'Connor has not put up a point since Edmonton on January 16th. Starting the game against Dallas on January 18th, until today, Logan O'Connor has no points. So what that tells me is basically since the Mikko Rantanen deal, you have 2 points from your fourth line. Jack Drury's got 2 goals, nothing since. Ross Colton and Miles Wood, struggling. Casey Mittelstadt, struggling. Yusso Parsonen, struggling. Where's the offense coming from? It's 4 players. It's Nathan McKinnon, 4 forwards, I should say. It's Nathan McKinnon, Marty Natchez, Jonathan Drouin, and Arturi Lehkonen. And outside of Drouin's assist on the Malinsky goal, the other 3 did not have a point tonight. You can see why this team struggles to score. Do you get it now? Cale Makar and Devon Taves, enough said. Nothing else needs to be said there. Sam Girard's got flashes, and then he's got flashes where he plays the other way. And then everybody else on that blue line, Sam Malinsky, Calvin DeHaan, Keaton Middleton, replaceable, get him out of the lineup. It's just a team with star power and nothing else. This is the season that if Nathan McKinnon suffered at any point in the year, God knows what, upper body injury, out 3 to 4 weeks. Had something like that happen, the Avalanche would not be in the playoff picture. Straight up. The cup year when it happened, you had Nazem Kadri to throw into the top line role. You had the depth to still put up points. You don't have that right now. You haven't had Val Nichushkin in almost 2 months. You look at this team and you look at how they're playing and you look at their inability to score, their inability to get that depth production. And you sit there and say, how many trades need to happen at the deadline for you to feel good about this team? How many different ways does Chris McFarland need to remake this roster and obviously he's part of the problem. A lot of these guys have not worked out the way they did in the past. How many different ways do you need to rework the roster to feel good going into the playoffs? Last year, we saw what the Avalanche did. Again, Wood, Colton, and O'Connor felt like a good line last year. They don't this year. And Logan O'Connor obviously suffered that late season injury. But you had a healthy Val, obviously, until the Dallas series where he disappeared again. You had a healthy Val. You had a healthy Lekkonen, healthy Nate Mikko and Drouin. You brought in Casey Mittelstadt. He fit pretty damn well. You had your top six. You had your third line, and then you had your fourth line because you brought in Yakov Trenin. You brought in Brandon Duhaime. You had other parts like that. You had Zach Parise. You had all of these parts, Andrew Cogliano. You had so many parts where you felt good. I just went through the forward core. The only forward you're missing from your lineup right now is Valeri Nichushkin. Yes, Gabe Landeskog as well, but he hasn't played pretty much at all. Right now, Val Nichushkin coming back into the lineup, and by pretty much at all, I mean he hasn't played in almost 3 years. Right now, getting Val Nichushkin back in the lineup gives you a fully healthy roster. Because again, I don't count Landeskog because his money is being used. His LTIR money is being used right now. Like, you don't really have space for him, I don't believe, unless you send down a couple players, but that's beyond the point. The point is right now, Val Nichushkin coming back, how much does that solve? The Avs record with Val in the lineup compared to without is a massive difference. And I've talked about that many times over the last 3 years. However, if he comes back and you pair him and Drouin with Mittelstadt, is that going to work? What if you pair him and Lekkonen with Mittelstadt? Is that going to work? Well, or are you going to throw Mittelstadt and Drouin and Lekkonen together, a line that once did work, but Casey Mittelstadt is just having a brutal season. And then you got Val with Nate and Neches, and you know, maybe that line does its thing. But that doesn't solve the bottom six issue. You know, usually when a team is missing somebody from the lineup, especially in the top six, when you add that player back to the top six, it pushes somebody in the top six down. That makes the lines kind of make more sense. So let's say Ross Colton. Imagine Ross Colton was having a good year and he's playing second line left winger. As soon as Nichushkin comes back, Colton can go back to either third line winger, third line center, and kind of reinvigorate the bottom six. That's not the case right now. Juuso Pärssinen could very well go from second line winger to healthy scratch or fourth line. Or he goes to third line and Miles Wood gets healthy scratch. Either way, Juuso Pärssinen going down into the bottom six isn't going to reinvigorate anything. So this team really needs to figure something out. I don't know what it is. I'm genuinely curious on how they handle these next 2 weeks. Because I'm at a loss of words. I'm at a loss of words at the amount of guys that are struggling in the middle of the lineup and how much that's hurting this team. Again, I've gone through this before in 2019 to 2022 when the Avalanche took a chance on a guy named Devon Taves and a guy named Val Nichushkin, some guy named Arturi Lekkonen, some guy named Andrei Burakovsky. Every single person they brought in was a hit. Even the depth guys. Andrew Cogliano, big hit. You're not getting that from Miles Wood. But now, Ross Colton had one decent season. He's been a fail. Casey Mittelstadt had a decent playoff run. He's been a fail right now. Miles Wood has taken a massive step back. Jack Drury's being overplayed. He should be in a fourth line role or third line role with better wingers. Logan O'Connor has struggled this year. Yes, I know he came back from that injury. He's needed time to get his things together, but it's up and down the lineup, and I'll just leave it at that. We'll see how they do against the St. Louis Blues Sunday night. Well, Sunday at 4 p.m. Mountain Time. And then we'll go from there. But moving on, if it is possible to move on from that as easily and quickly as I'm trying to do, let's talk about trade deadline. Let's talk about a few things. Let's talk about how Elliot Friedman today said on the Saturday Night Headlines segment on Hockey Night in Canada. He said that there are teams that are trying to look into the idea of reuniting the Shen brothers, who used to play together in Philadelphia, obviously that being Braden and Luke Shen. The one thing is, both of those guys play for different teams. Braden Shen is the captain of the St. Louis Blues, 11 goals, 21 assists, 32 points in 57 games this year. He is 33 years old. He makes $6.5 million a year. his production has taken a little bit of a dip the last few years. He went from 58 points in 62 games the year the Avs won the Cup to a full season at 65 points in 2023. Last year, he only had 46. This year, he's on pace for right around that number. And then Luke Shen playing defense for the Nashville Predators. I wonder if this is something the Avalanche try to do, but at the same time, I don't know if that's the move for them. I don't know if Luke and Braden Shen are the types of players that this team can use. Maybe one of them, maybe Braden, or maybe Luke. But if those are your two big moves, I don't know what else you can do to really fix this roster. He also mentioned, it's been written. Ben Pope wrote about this in Chicago, and Elliot Friedman obviously reiterated it. But Seth Jones is looking to get out of Chicago. Not necessarily that he wants to get out of Chicago, but he wants to play for a contender. The Blackhawks are far away from that. That's a player that I've written about in the past. That's a guy that I'd love the Avalanche to take a shot at acquiring. I don't know what it's going to cost, though. That's the only issue. To me, it's, you know, if you want to fix this Avalanche team, especially the second line center role, you don't want to rush into it. And obviously Seth Jones is a defenseman, so I'm not really talking about him. I just kind of changed subjects here. But like when you go back to Braden Shen, when you think about guys like Brock Nelson, you don't want to rush into a decision where you're giving up more assets and kind of Lars Ellering yourself, where you bring in a rental out of desperation. But at the same time, the big names out there might not be available until the offseason. You know, what the Avs did last year when they got Casey Mittelstadt is kind of a rarity to bring in a player like that in the middle of the year. And obviously, he's the one that unfortunately is not working out and probably is going to get traded if things don't get figured out soon. The other big thing that was talked about is Mikko Rantanen. This has been bubbling on the surface for a few days before the break, after the break. Elliot Friedman said today that the Carolina Hurricanes made a multi-year offer, probably a max 8-year term offer to Mikko Rantanen, well over $100 million. I don't want to say well over, but 9 digits, $100 million plus. The thing with that is, so what is basically happening there is Mikko Rantanen has received the offer. He has not rejected the offer. He has not accepted the offer. He's told the Carolina Hurricanes, it's not yes, it's not no. He needs time to mull things over. He needs time to settle. It is very clear. It has been confirmed. We've heard it from Hurricanes teammates now that Rantanen is still struggling with the change. And understandably so, his world is still kind of being, has been kind of flipped upside down, and for him to rush into a decision is not going to happen. So for Carolina, I'm really curious to see if he decides to sign there. And if he does, I'm really curious at what the number will look like. The other factor here is if he doesn't, and if he doesn't by March 7, do the Hurricanes trade him? Elliot Friedman said something today that I haven't heard anybody else say that is finally being on the table. It's if Carolina is confident that they can sign him, even if he doesn't sign a contract today, before March 7, I should say, if they're confident that they can sign him after March 7, they will keep him for the playoff run. So Carolina doesn't want this to be a rental. They want him signed. But if they feel confident that they can sign him, they'll go ahead after March 7 and keep him on the roster and kind of test their luck. I don't believe that's what they want to do. I don't believe that's what they're going to do. I think we're either going to see a Mikko Rantanen contract or potentially him to be traded. The one thing is, like, if he hits the market, and Friedman talked about this on his podcast on Friday, he might end up in a Western Conference rival. He said there isn't a playoff team that wouldn't look at Mikko Rantanen. And the reality is, even if he's a rental, Carolina has him at $4.6 million right now. You cut that in half, it's $2.3 million. So who's willing to trade for Mikko Rantanen at $2.3 million? And Friedman went on to list literally every contender from Edmonton to Vegas to Dallas to Toronto. There isn't a team that won't be in the market for a Mikko Rantanen if he hits the market, given where his salary now is with the Carolina Hurricanes, courtesy of the Chicago Blackhawks eating half of it. So that's something to definitely keep an eye on. I still think there is a weird alternate universe where Rantanen comes back to the Avs in the offseason. I don't know what it would take for that to happen. Probably a Gabriel Landeskog retirement and a whole lot of I'm sorries from both sides and negotiations on a contract that will look nothing like it probably would have had Rantanen still been on the team and signed a deal. Obviously, the first point being he wouldn't be able to get 8 years, but even what the number starts with, it probably won't even have to start with a 12. Again, I'm like, the most important thing here is I'm kind of talking out of my ass. Like, there's nothing that says Rantanen is going to come back, but I think he is really struggling with the change, and I genuinely can't wait to see where it goes. But with that, I'm going to put an end to the show here. I don't want to go too long. The Avalanche play again on Sunday. They got the St. Louis Blues. It'll be most likely Mackenzie Blackwood versus Jordan Binnington as the Avs and Blues go head-to-head. So if you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we out you.